Good evening, Matt. Welcome to the Space Show.
My pleasure to be here.
Given that the atmosphere is so thin, how come it can pick up so much dust?
Actually, picking up the dust is the problem. It has a very thin atmosphere, roughly 6,000ths the atmospheric pressure on the surface here on the Earth. And so its bearing capacity, it's very difficult to get that atmosphere moving fast enough to actually pick up the dust. It turns out once you get the dust in the atmosphere, it's easy to keep it there because the dust is a couple of microns across. It's very, very fine grain, probably the equivalent of kitchen flour in sort of constituency. So once it gets in the atmosphere, it's easy to stay there by the winds. One of the mechanisms that we discovered at the Pathfinder site, we saw repeatedly little dust devils, tens of meters across, hundreds of meters high, that reverse flow vortices of air that scour across and look like they pick up dust. They definitely had dust in them. We were able to image them. And so that may be an effective dust-raising mechanism on the red planet.
And yet Mars gets global dust storms at times, doesn't it?
Yeah, now that's a different effect. Those actually look like they start in particular areas in the southern hemisphere, dominantly in southern spring, I guess, northern fall, and they grow to very large magnitudes and actually can envelop the entire planet. The best example was the arrival of Mariner 9, the first orbiting spacecraft at Mars. I guess it was the late 60s, early 70s. The spacecraft arrived in November of the year before, and it could not see the surface. It was completely occluded with dust for 4.5 months.
Yes, and that was 1971, I think, and the Russians lost a lander. They had to basically go down into the dust storm because, and in the same way that with Pathfinder, you know, the Viking went into orbit, didn't it? And Pathfinder went straight in, and I think the Mars ones went straight in and right into the dust storm.
Yeah, so I don't believe that that would be the reason for the loss. We analyzed quite carefully with Pathfinder the potential effect of a dust storm on the landing. And the total mass of material in the atmosphere is just too small to have a significant impact. Now, the horizontal winds could have been a bit of a problem, but I think you'll see that if you look at, there's over a dozen landers from the Soviet Union were sent to Mars, and they all failed, and I think you can't ascribe that to dust storm. They actually had something wrong. Something failed on those spacecraft.
How quickly would dust accumulate on the... on Pathfinder? You actually measured it, didn't you?
Yes, we had solar cells with a little cover that were designed to measure the accumulation of dust. And basically, it's, you know, it's sub-microns per day kind of accumulation. The solar power was affected, however. We lost about 0.2% each day on the solar panels from the accumulation of dust. However, I would argue, given the landing site, the way it looks, and the fact that it has changed very little since it was deposited there, that can't be a long-term average. That's an unusually dusty period, or else that dust, after it does accumulate, it is subsequently blown off by maybe the vortices or something else as well. We were only there for a short period of one season, and we never even saw high winds, really, at the surface, so... Other seasons could have been much windier and may have led to that net loss of material I spoke about.
What's the typical weather like on Mars?
Pretty darn cold. Let's see. In Kelvin, the low temperature is 200, so that's, minus 60 or something Celsius. Midday at the warmest point, it's probably around freezing or so. So the temperature change during the day is 60 degrees Celsius, and that's huge indeed. In addition, there were enormous short-term variations in the temperatures in the morning, up to 15 to 20 degrees C difference from one moment to the next minute or so. And the temperature variation between your feet and your nose was another 15 or 20 degrees C, likely due to small vortices or cold, very cold morning air being warmed by the surface and rising in these small convecting eddies. A very, very unstable atmosphere compared to what we have here on the Earth.
Pressure variations during the day?
Pressure variations... we're probably, you know, of order, I can't even recall, to tell you the truth. We did measure the barometric pressure throughout the lifetime of the mission, and we reached the minimum barometric pressure at about Sol 22 or so after landing. And that was significant because roughly 20% of the atmosphere on Mars actually cold traps, freezes at the poles. And so we actually measured the minimum atmospheric pressure on Mars, which meant that full 20% of the atmosphere was frozen in the south polar cap, which is dominantly CO2.
A Sol was a Martian day.
Yes, a Sol was a Martian day. In addition, from the tracking results, we were able to measure the mass of material that cold trapped out because of changes in length of day, and that matched predictions pretty darn well.
We mentioned photographing the sunrises and sunsets. Other than being, you know, well, beautiful, there was a scientific purpose behind doing that.
Oh, certainly, yes. By imaging the sun at different solar azimuths, you can actually determine the characteristics of the particles in the atmosphere, and you can learn about the water vapor that's in the atmosphere. And we were able to measure both of those parameters by this imaging scheme.
There was one photograph you published not long after the landing in which you had a photograph of a cloudy sky and an X, you are here, obviously an attempt to photograph the Earth. Did you actually succeed in photographing the Earth in the end?
No, and we were thwarted every time by these white wispy clouds. We tried probably close to a dozen times trying to see the blue orb in the sky, and every time we tried to get there, we failed. So,
if you had succeeded, would it have been just a dot?
Oh yes, absolutely a dot. Yes, we did. If you think about it, we actually had a telescope on the surface of Mars for 3 months. Now it wasn't a very good one in terms of resolution, but we imaged standard stars and got their colors and used that to ascertain the opacity at night. We also got full spectrum of both Martian moons, Phobos and Deimos. And those spectra show those moons to be much redder than we had expected, and similar to type D or G asteroids in the asteroid belt.
So quite a wide-ranging thing. Did you manage to do anything with the rover in particular, just for the heck of it? I mean, we saw these lovely shots of it doing sort of whirlabouts and so on, but these are obviously just changing direction. But did you just drive it around for the hell of it?
No, it was too precious a commodity and too precious a resource. So we always had a purpose. Now, there were technology experiments that the rover was tasked with doing and carrying out, and some of those involved driving for extended distances up to 10 meters using the hazard control devices on board to test its effectiveness on Mars. And so there were some, but there was always a purpose to what we had. About the only thing that you could argue that we did somewhat frivolously, and that's probably the wrong word, was we took images of the rover during its traverse to make rover movies. So you can actually track where but it turned out they were scientifically very useful because you could pinpoint exactly where the rover went during the command and understand the uncertainties, the wheel slippages, and so on that the rover would undergo.
Yes, as you say, that looking at the tracks there through the thing, you can pretty much judge how thick the soil is, can't you?
Yeah, we learned a tremendous amount about the microstratigraphy because we were actually able to trench holes with the rover wheels, image them close up, determine their mechanical properties by the wheel currents in the rover wheels and the strength of the material, the angle of repose, and so on. So we were able to calculate cohesions and angle of reposes and internal constitutive properties for many of the soil types at the site.
You lost contact with Pathfinder before you lost contact with Sojourner, or before Sojourner failed, and I believe Sojourner was programmed to go looking for the signal from Pathfinder if it lost contact, and one has a vision of it sort of circling endlessly around the around the lander. How long do you think it actually did that?
Well, that's kind of an interesting mental picture, but I'm actually quite dubious that it did that for very long. It was actually, there was a contingency sequence that was built in that if for perchance we could not uplink to the spacecraft and tell it what to do, you would still have it do a bunch of things that you could watch and get data on. And so that was this contingency sequence. And the rover had in it a plan to circumnavigate the lander at a particular distance.